Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining me today from Tampa, Florida is Merrick Block. Merrick is the Corporate Director for Investigation at Shriners Hospitals for Children in Tampa, Florida. He's also the principal at the firm Winter Compliance. Merrick, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
It's my pleasure to join you.
So we're going to talk today about writing the investigation report. Merrick's an expert, obviously, as you can tell from his title in this. He's also one of the two faculty members for the SCCE's own internal investigations conference. You know, after the investigation's done, it's time to write the report. It can be just as fraught an exercise as doing the investigation itself. So let's start with a basic question. How do you know that the investigation is really done and it's time to write the report?
Well, the best way to tell is by a good investigation plan in the beginning. In that investigation plan, you should be identifying the business conduct standard that you're measuring the true facts against. The business conduct standard, of course, will have elements of what it takes to determine if there's been a violation. You know you're done when you've developed enough proof to either prove or disprove each element of that allegation. And that once you have that proof, then you're ready to make a determination as to whether the allegation was substantiated or not, and then write the report.
So, but let me go back to, you know, when you start the, when you write the plan at the beginning, obviously the investigation may take you into strange places. Is there a good rule of thumb of when you've sort of gone down the side roads enough that it's time to stop?
Well, the standard of proof, of course, is preponderance of the evidence. Of course, you should be soliciting admissions of improper conduct, mitigating circumstances, and exculpatory information from the subject of your investigation. But you basically know you're done when you have proof as to each element and essentially at least one piece of evidence to corroborate that proof. Once you're up to that, you're pretty much ready to make a determination. But I would actually advise people to raise the bar a little higher. Go one step further. The most important goal of any investigation is to explain the true facts, basically what happened here. And I think you really know when you're done when you can kind of break the code and give a coherent narrative that explains what happened, why it happened, and how it happened. I think without getting too much into being, you know, formulaic about it, when you can really be able to explain a coherent story, that's when you know you're done.
So what should you include in the report? I'm guessing, based on what you said, obviously the coherent story, but I imagine there's more to that.
Well, I think you want to get back to what you're really trying to accomplish with the report, first of all. Remember, the report has to do two important things. Actually, it has to do more than two, so let's just kind of rattle those off. First of all, the report is going to show that your organization responded timely and reasonably to the report. Because remember, it's going to show you resolved it. And also, it's important to know that organizations are now being judged not only on how they whether they resolve the report, but the investigation process as well. It's also going to document the steps taken in the investigation, the procedural steps. And importantly, it's going to show not only whether the allegation is substantiated, but it's going to lay the factual groundwork for any post-investigation activity, discipline, lawsuit, self-reporting, anything like that. So, but that's what I think your biggest goals in the report have to be. Then getting to what the structure of the report, first of all, you need to explain what the allegation you're investigating is. What I do is I distill the entire report into one sentence. So an example might be, the report was understood to be whether John Smith had an impermissible conflict of interest when he provided consulting services to a vendor engaged by his company. Then you're going to want to explain the procedural history, the business conduct standard involved, a short conclusion as to your findings, the narrative explanation, and then your overall determination. Then you have the option, depending on your organization, whether you want to add some recommendations as well. But that's generally what a good investigation report contains.
So basically, it's what you found and how you found it.
I guess so, yes.
Okay, so now you touch at the very end about the recommendations. You know, I've heard some discussions back and forth about whether or not the investigation report should include recommendations as to what to do. Where do you fall? Is that something a report should have, or is that for others to decide?
Well, I think I'll try to dodge the question and then answer it. The investigation should make recommendations. The real issue to be addressed is how is it best to do that? I'll give you some points on that. If you are the investigator, you probably know the true facts better than anybody because you're the one who gathered them. So when you think about it, you're in the best position to recommend ways to improve the system. You know, an investigation when you're doing misconduct or fraud is a very expensive lesson for the company and what's going wrong in the business. Also accept the fact that misconduct is always capable of repetition. So you really see that it's incumbent upon the investigator to make suggestions about how to improve the business. Where it runs into problems is how you make those recommendations. If you make a recommendation that management must do something, I believe you stepped over a line and now you're injecting your judgment into how management should run the business. Besides the political aspects about that, I think that exceeds your authority. The next question is, should those recommendations be made in the report? That's an organizational decision. The recommendations could be made in a separate document. They could be made in a business meeting. But the point is, you really need to figure out how to make them. Any investigator needs to realize that management may follow a recommendation or may decline to follow it. But the reason they decline to follow it may have everything to do with budget and timing or an organizational priority, and not that they don't care about what you care. The important thing is to remember that when you make a recommendation, you are speaking on behalf of the organization. If the recommendation isn't followed and the misconduct recurs, a plaintiff in the future could look at your report and say, you see, your own investigator said, please make this change, and you didn't do it. And that's where there could be a problem.
So you mentioned, as you were talking there, you know, things not to include, like, you know, getting too specific on the recommendations. Are there anything else that should not be included in the report?
Yes. You should never be including conclusions of law. You never should be making advisory decisions about the police should be contacted. You never should be making evaluations of whether the organization can be liable for something. An investigation report should stick to the facts and a conclusion as to the comparison of those facts to a standard. When lawyers, for example, and I'm a lawyer myself, so I can understand the concern, push back on compliance officers and say, look, I don't want you to write a report. I don't want you to write a big report. I think that's the type of thing they're driving at. Facts, you know, facts are facts. And if bad facts have occurred in your organization, you can't change that as a compliance officer. Learning about them are not going to change those facts. Documenting those facts accurately is not going to create liability. It's only when the investigator or compliance officer takes that next unnecessary step and now starts offering his or her view on the legal significance of the conduct they've examined. So that's why conclusions of law, post-investigation statements, those are the types of things that you don't include. One more thing I should quickly add. You never include your opinion. So anything that you let the evidence speak for itself, and you never inject in my view, I believe, my assessment showed. No, you are the investigator, you gathered the evidence, and it's the evidence that speaks for you. You don't need to inject yourself personally in there.
Now, you touched on one topic as you were explaining in answering that last question, which is, you know, sometimes there's pushback from legal that they don't want a report to be prepared. What do you think motivates that feeling? And, you know, obviously you think it should be, but what advice would you give to an investigator facing that kind of pushback?
Sure. Well, again, I think first we have to understand their position. Lawyers tend to see things, we're trained in school to see things in terms of risk. And a concern here would be an investigation report that documents bad facts could simply be used by a plaintiff to say, here, look at this report. They even admit their own conduct. The point to be made to the lawyers is that the investigation only discovers facts that are already there and already known, at least to some in the business. All we really did was assemble it into a document. So the first point has to be that, you know, we haven't really moved the liability needle. And then what I really do with the lawyers, you know, I say, listen, what are your concerns? And what you often find is it's really just that threshold concern. And then when you explain, listen, facts are not subject to the attorney-client privilege, and that bad document or the statement of somebody who saw a bad thing happen, those can all be discovered in litigation anyway. So it's only a poorly written investigation report that gets the company in trouble. A properly written one doesn't. And in fact, a properly written one allows the organization to respond affirmatively and allows the organization to have the positive story of saying, we discovered a bad thing, we identified the bad thing, and then show the corrective steps that you did as a result of the report. So that's why I always suggest, don't let the pushback from lawyers or anybody else, you know, really discourage you or dissuade you. I'll also offer the thought that I'm sure many managers would prefer that there's no report, because in many cases, the managers are finding that these bad facts are embarrassing to them personally and professionally. But again, the report needs to be written because you are a fiduciary of the organization and it's in the shareholders' interest if you're a public company.
Yeah, and you touched on something I thought was interesting there, that, you know, when people think of reports, they, you know, it's about finding out what went wrong and who should be disciplined. But you touched on the fact that there's another benefit to having it, which is, you know, allows the organization to respond positively, I think, as you said. Are there any other goals people should think of for an investigation report?
Well, the investigation report can do a few things. First of all, it's going to solve your immediate problem about, do I need to discipline somebody? But if you accept the fact that any improper behavior is capable of repetition, it's going to allow the organization to tighten its processes and internal controls. Frequently, that's how you find weaknesses in your system. Internal audit doesn't find them all, and it's usually when you have a problem. The investigation report can also be used as a shield. I've had cases where we've investigated somebody, discovered wrongdoing, and they've been terminated. And then they hire a lawyer who then claims wrongful termination. Well, I've had situations where we sent the lawyer the investigation report and, of course, showed the reasonableness as well as the significance of our findings and never heard from the lawyer again. Remember, too, that when you write a report, it should not just be a litany of mistakes. If things worked right, that should be included in the report. So if your hotline reporting system worked right, if management's response once we learned of the report was appropriate, if it was discovered by internal controls that worked well, it's all part of the story. So what we do try to do is because we're trying to tell the truth, let's tell the good and the bad and let the good news help us as well.
Well, thank you, Merrick, for that. I think you've offered some really constructive insights and really practical things to think about as people go to write their investigation reports. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I want to thank all of you for listening and hope that we expanded your compliance perspectives. I'm Adam Turteltaub, wishing you a very good day.